All right, going to be taking your calls here in just a bit, so get ready for that with David Omen. And I've got a bunch of Twitter questions lined up, too, as well. So we'll be doing that in just a bit after the break. Welcome back. Coast to Coast AM, my guest tonight, David Omen. He owns the house, lives at the house up on Seattle Drive, right here in Los Angeles, down the street from where the Sharon Tate home was with Roman Polanski, where on August 9th, 1969, the murders took place, the Manson murders. Now, David, I have to often wonder when these, you know, because I've talked to several people that have been there now, that the amount of spirits that are there, or ghosts, or whatever you want to call them, are there in mass, that maybe they're attracted to the Sharon Tate house. Maybe there's something there, a loneliness that is there, and there is something going on with your property too at the same time. The combination of the two is like a perfect storm.
To be honest with you, what Barry Taff had said, that even had the murders not taken place down the street, this place would be loaded.
Right, right.
The thing is that he says there's a geomagnetic anomaly that the U.S. Geological Survey has declared is in this area, and he says it's not pre-seismic, it's pre-volcanic, meaning there's most likely a large lava tube under the earth here about a mile down, and maybe in 100, as he said, 100,000 years, this whole thing will end up becoming a big volcano. But in the meantime, it's placidly just moving, shifting lava under the earth's crust here, and the proximity to the house in this area is that the whole area's got a lot of activity with the geomagnetic anomaly. It's just the way that the engineer might design the house and structurally engineered, designed the house and basically emplaced all this steel on the iron, so to speak, these four steel I-beams across the second and third floor support mechanisms, that increased the, the functionality of the dynamic of the house. So some other houses down the street from my house, not on this private drive necessarily, had also, friends of mine had expressed that they had some crazy wild paranormal activity going on in their house, to a lesser degree, but it was related to the old homeowner who had previously lived there, who had passed away, and apparently he was haunting the house because apparently, as his kids said later on, he wasn't happy about seeing somebody remodel and redo his castle, as he believed, because he lived there for 30 years and then went to a convalescent home and died shortly thereafter.
Right.
So it has more to do with the area than it does have to do with Sharon. Like I said, and I said this many times before, they're probably less than 0.1% of these spirits that are here. By that, I mean there's a lot of Native American energies that have been recorded here. Rudolph Valentino's spirits apparently been, somebody said they spotted his spirit here, and Falcon Lair is literally across the canyon from here, from my house, and it's maybe 1,000 feet away. Where it stood. So,
and Jimi Hendrix has visited the house.
Yes, and Doris Duke lived there, and she was murdered in that house as well by the butler or her caretaker. There's a lot of other spirits that are here besides them, and that's why people saying, "Oh, I want to see Sharon." It's like, no, the person that's closest to you, that's friends or a relative that died that's around you, is the one that's going to manifest and be here in the house with you.
Well, John just asked on Twitter, yeah, and thank you for this, John. He says, can you please ask David if all of the spirits are always nice, or do they sometimes get angry or violent?
Well, you got to remember, all a spirit is the residual energy of an individual. So, again, I've had spirits curse people out. I've had Chris Fleming here, the famous Chris Fleming, the psychic who has been here originally 10 years ago with the Ghost Hunters people. Show has come here several times since, and actually spent the night here several times. And on one occasion, a spirit basically said to Chris, and it was recorded on his little recorder without the use of a Frank's box or anything like that. And the spirit said, "F you, and die, and get the hell out of the house." And
wow.
The woman who was there, because it was during an investigation that people were going, that Chris had people buy tickets for here at the house, had said, "Oh, my God, it's a demon." And I said, "No, it's not a demon." I said, "It's a spirit who happens to be familiar with Chris And you're basically eavesdropping in a conversation that said spirit is having with Chris.
Yeah, that would make a lot of sense.
Mm-hmm.
Let's go to the phones. We've got a lot of phone calls lined up here. Let's go east of the Rockies. Dennis, my home state, Terre Haute, Indiana. Dennis, welcome to the coast.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call. I was just wondering, I never heard, how far away is his house from the original house that the murders took place in? Because I thought they tore that original house down. And who owns that land now? Is that privately owned, where the original, is it just an empty lot sitting there next to his house, or what?
Yeah, thank you for the phone call, Dennis. Yeah, so when did the house get torn down, and who owns the property now?
Well, the house was torn down in 1992, and Harvey Weintraub bought the property, rebuilt a monstrosity on top of it. The new owner, who I will not name the name of, he's just an individual who's in the movie industry. I don't want to get in any flack from naming his name, but he's very well known and respected in the entertainment industry. And he actually built the house, they tore down the house from one end of the property to the other and literally bulldozed 3 feet up and turned the earth over. And I want to also say to everybody, that the myth that a spirit in some way, shape, or form is tied to the place where they died is 110% myth. There's no truth to that one iota. And I'm not saying that to kind of bolster my presence or my stock, so to speak, in the paranormal field. I'm just telling you, think about it.
Yeah.
The property line is just like a line in the sand. And what energy, like lightning, looks at a line in the sand or a state line or a country line and says, oh, I can't go over that property line, that national line between the boundaries of two countries, because it's going to offend somebody. Spirits and energy, which is what spirits are, occupy that which is non-controllable by rational thought that humans might apply in such ways as demonstratively saying, that's your property. That's just like the Native Americans laugh when you say you own that land. You're going to die. You don't own it.
How far?
Long after you die, so to speak. So the spirits meander around, let us just say. They don't have a ball and chain holding them down.
Right. How far is your property from the gates?
150 feet.
150 feet.
Yeah, you could throw a baseball and hit it.
Yeah, that's
You walk out to my driveway. It's never. I can't not look down to my left and not see the gates. But the gates aren't the gates. They were torn down and removed. And like I said, they literally removed another large portion of the front area of the house. Well, in front of the house, because they put in a 25-car subterranean garage.
Well, I'm sure Harvey said, I need that dirt gone. And who could blame him? Let's go to the first-time call.
Two-bearing wall. Harvey left two-bearing walls from the original structure in his creation and the original floor from the kitchen of the Tate House. And I personally saw it when Harvey brought me in there with my father to say, when we were trying to sell my father the property for some $10 million, my dad says, let me look at the property. And he took us for a tour, and he says, I was drawn literally to this 3-foot by 3-foot section of floor that was adjacent to one of the side exits of the house, of the new house. And I said, Mr. Weinstein, what's that? And he says, oh, that's a trap door. And he goes, you want to see what's in there? And I said, yeah, I'm kind of curious. And he goes, oh, okay. So he lifts up the floorboards that were there, and I said, what's? And I turns on a light, and I look down, and I said, oh my God, it's the original floor from the Tate kitchen, he says. I said, really, can I go there? And he goes, yeah. So I jumped down on it, and I started put my hand on it, and I felt it, and was like, whoo-wee, that's got, that's just like full of like energy. I could just feel things. And I said, whoa. I said, all right, I got to get up out of here. And I came back off, but it was yellow linoleum, as I recall. And it was just like a 20-foot by 20-foot section. And they did that to get away with the remodel. That's why they did that.
Let's go to the first-time caller's line, Curtis in Topeka, Kansas. You're up next on Coast.
Come on.
Curtis, you're live.
Yeah. I had a ghost in the house of my landlady's mother.
Okay.
And she... he visits every now and then, like 4 o'clock in the morning. I'll have the heater on, and it'll get definitely cold on one side of me.
Do you know his name?
I almost see your breath.
Do you know his name?
Her name's Ethel.
I know. His name.
Whose name?
I thought you said it was your landlady's lover.
Mother.
Oh, mother. Oh, I'm sorry.
My landlady's mother.
Okay. Do you know her name?
Yes, Ethel.
Yeah, oh, Ethel. And so do you talk to her? See, yeah. David, this is what I was talking about. You've got to name the spirits, man. You got to find out.
1,000 names, and I'm supposed to remember one?
Yeah, I would.
Oh, that's right. This dear Charlie. I see that. That's right. You got that goatee. That's right. You're the one that was here that died in, like, 1935 and meanders around the area. Got it. Okay. And then there's that. I remember. No, I mean, you don't. It's not like you physically see them. I mean, what your caller is talking about, he's lucky. He's got one spirit.
Right.
An appearance at a regular hour. That's a different type of a haunting. What we've got here is like a revolving door where ghosts come in and they go out. And I have no idea who's here at what time. But like I said, famously, Lisa came into the house. That's Lisa Williams. And she walks in maybe 10 feet in and she stops. And Lisa's this 5-foot-tall English woman, and she looks and beams a look right into my bar and into the through the, which we have a pass-through that goes into the den. And she goes, do you know you have a whole big party in your bar and in the den? And I'm going, I'm looking over there, squinting my eyes, going, I can't see a thing. And I look there and said, no, I don't see anything, Lisa. And she goes, well, Sharon's there, Jay's there, Rudolph Valentino's there, and I see a group of Native Americans around, clustered, talking around a little fire and stuff, and I'm going, uh-huh. And she goes, and there's some other spirits I can't recognize, but there's a whole big party in there, and I'm going, okay. And I feel really put off. It's like, damn, I can't see what the hell's going on in there. But she's getting this whole big story going, there's a party. And then I'm going, okay, go on. And she goes, well, they want me to tell you that they really appreciate your allowing them to stay here. And I stopped and I looked at Lisa and I said, excuse me, I've seen the pictures of Sharon and Jay and how those people died. I said, in honor and in respect to them and all the others I consider if they're here, I said, I feel terrible for the way Sharon was killed and Jay and Stephen and Abigail and Wojciech. And I said, so as far as I'm concerned, if they're hanging here and they don't do anything disruptive to my life, that's fine. We can all get along together. I have no problem with it. And she goes, well, that's what they're talking about. They love the fact that you just allow them to hang here. And I said, okay. I said, I love it. I said, I have no problem with that. You know, we're all going to die. And she goes, that's the attitude that they really appreciate, that you don't really harbor any kind of, like, fear of them. And it's like, fear of what?
Yeah, they're comfortable. They're comfortable.
Well, I'm comfortable. They're not, again, people say they're scared, they're demonic energies. And it's like, where? Well, here. And it's like, no, it's last night was an example. These people came in, and there was some heavy energy with them, to the point where we went down there, like I said, and I remember this vividly. This guy stood 3 feet away from me, and an energy walked right by me and pushed me off the landing of the earth in the earthen wall room onto the kitchen floor, literally pushed me off. And I felt this like, just like a billowing like force. And I said, whoa. And we have it on this closed circuit cameras, and I watched it, and you can hear me say, oh, my God, and I fell to the ground. And then Lilia says, somebody just pulled my shirt right after I got pushed out of the way. So what I'm saying to you is that it's crazy energy and stuff. But, again, if you say, look, and I said right after that, I stood up and I said, that's it. I said, you cannot, and I will not allow you to sit there and pull me over like that. That is not respectful. I said, you think I'm not going to call you out on that? You don't get away with that. And that's what I'm telling people. I told them, somebody called me and said, what do I do? I'm possessed. And I said, you have to remove the spirit that you think is inside of you yourself. Because looking for an external source to remove it from you is going to be painfully unavailable to make it happen. You have to reclaim your space because it is your space. And it calls for ultimate self-respect. When you have that, you command that, you can keep things away from you that don't need the energy spent on trying to convert you to letting you open up and let them have a slide in to your spirit, so to speak, and like meander around in you. Because some people, when they're low on their energy, they say, oh, just, And one particular individual, I'm not going to name names, that's on a television show that was here, said to me, quote, I allow my body to harbor spirits. I let them share space with my body. And I dropped my jaw and I said, you don't have a lot of self-respect, do you?
Well, Curtis, before I get back to that, David, Curtis, did that answer your question?
Yes, it did.
Yeah, thank you so much, Curtis, and have a great, safe Halloween. Thank you for calling.
One last thing, Curtis, talk to her and see what she's there to talk to you about, because she's not there by happenstance. I think she wants to communicate something with you, and she's just waiting for you to say, well, what's going on? What can I do? What do you want to tell me? Because she wants to talk to somebody about something. That's why she keeps coming back, I'm getting, because she's wanting to communicate to you. So next time you wake up, and I'm being told, have a pad of paper by your bedside. So whatever she says, you write it down, because you're due to forget it in the morning when you finally wake up, because that's what happens to the memory. But if you write it down, you'll have it on your for all time to look at and say, oh, my God, that's what she said last night to me when I was talking to her. Trust me, it's well worth it.
Thank you so much, Curtis. Have a great, safe Halloween.
Bye-bye.
So what about, and we're going to be up against a break here, David, so really quick, what do you do when you have guests over at the house and they have a negative attitude and they're trying to incite the spirits and taking that approach as opposed to being, you know, laid back like you are?
I can just reflect upon one in particular case when a show came out here, and usually that's not the case. And if it is the case, the show is an example of what happens to people that don't treat people or spirits with respect. You get crapped on. And that's what happened to a certain individual. I call him the Nameless Paraceleb. That's on the show Ghost Adventures.
Okay. Yeah, let's not go there.
Yeah. But he came out here, and they had a very, very pointed attitude. And I didn't know it at the time. But apparently the spirits felt very, very uncomfortable about what they were doing in their practices, and again, the reenactment of the Sharon Tate spirit walking down the driveway with the nightgown, white nightgown covered in blood, and she was pregnant. And I felt like their lack of respect leading up to the actual lockdown created such a malicious, antagonistic vibe that the spirits basically took it right out on them from the get-go, and literally their start time was 9 o'clock. They were put off for an hour to start their show because of mechanical failure.
Sure.
Going out. So during the investigation, they literally, Zach came out halfway through and fell down on the floor in front of the house and was like unbelievably impinged with memory issues and like literally feeling like he was wiped out.
Okay, we got to take a break right here. This is Coast to Coast. My guest tonight, David Omen. We'll be right back. Check this out. Has the secret of eternal youth actually finally been found? Researchers pinpoint a chemical that they say has the potential to postpone aging. That's right. And, you know, my friend Nathan, standing in front of me behind the glass, needs it. The study is from the University of Copenhagen Center for Healthy Aging and the American National Institute of Health. I suppose this is pretty close to being the real deal. Check out the full article right now over at coasttocoastam.com. I'm yours, Jimmy Church. My guest tonight, David Omen, The Omen House. It's Halloween. Your phone calls next. Welcome back to Coast to Coast AM. Yeah, that's right. It is the season. It's Halloween. I'm yours, Jimmy Church. My guest tonight, David Omen, and he does have the house, lives in it, down the street from where the Roman Polanski home was. Torn down in 1992. I find that part interesting, David, because I was there in 84 and went up with some friends. And I told you about this and went up and parked the car and went up and looked through the fence. And I got to tell you, I was pretty creeped out. I didn't want to get out of the car. I was not into checking it out. I didn't want to do it, but I was talked into it, and I did not enjoy it. I did not enjoy the vibe. And I don't know if it was because of the history, because I know what happened there, or that maybe there was just a creepy thing that was going on there. But I couldn't do it.
I would have to say that I've been up here, and sometimes it does have the vibe and feeling that's a little bit hinky at times. But and when you were here in 1984, it was a heck of a lot more rustic.
Yes.
There wasn't, again, my house wasn't here. The house next door to me was here, and the house next door to that wasn't there. And then there was just the house right next to the gate, but that was it. There was just two houses, and everything was still very much like it was 15 years earlier. Undeveloped, the road wasn't repaved until last year. It was pretty, let's just say it was pretty interesting. When we bought the property in 1999, 7 years after that house was torn down, they were still managing to work on that property.
Right.
That was, it was strange. Up here.
Okay, let's go to the phones. Let's go to Wild Card Charles in Elgin, Texas. Charles, you're up next on Coast.
Oh, yes. Hey there. I'm kind of curious, there's a lot of people that sort of want to get in touch with their, a lot of times after somebody passes on, especially if it's a really, bad kind of passing, I guess, people want to they want to know if their loved one might still be around. And I wondered if people ever go over to his house, listening to what he says about how it works, how people show up with spirits around them. If people go over to his house just to find out who they've got around them, if they got a loved one around them or something like that. I mean, has he ever had any experiences like that where people come over for that purpose?
Yeah, sure. Thank you for the call, Charles. David, do people come by and try to connect with dead relatives?
Well, yeah, Charles. As a matter of fact, I have friends of mine, and I think we all have friends, and I myself have friends and relatives that have passed away. And a friend of mine came out from Kansas City, Missouri, it's like 5 years ago now, and his brother had committed suicide literally like 2 weeks earlier, and he said, I got to head out west and I just got to take a break. I just can't deal with it. I need to take a break and just detox. I got to take a break from work. And so he said, I'm taking a road trip. So he drove out here and he was going to go up and down the coast. And he said, I'm going to spend a couple of days at your house and just chill. I said, please, by all means, I think it's a good idea. And in the back of my head, I was thinking, oh, this is great. I've got a friend of mine that has a relative that just passed away in tragic circumstances. And I said, this is interesting. We'll see what happens. So my friend came out here, and every morning and every night, every morning I would say, anything happen? He goes, no. And I said, well, make sure you've got a piece of paper next to your bed, so if something does happen, you can write it down, and then in the morning you can tell me about it. For 3 days and three nights, nothing happens. The last night that he's here, it's about midnight. He's going to drive up, out, leave at about 6 a.m., and I go downstairs to feed the cats. And he's in the balcony smoking a cigarette, and all of a sudden, I'm downstairs and I hear this something slide across the floor and then make a large, louder sliding, like scraping sound comes to the floor, and then a bang and a kaboom. And I come running upstairs and I look to my right, and one of my sofa chairs that I had at the time was literally right next to the balcony, and it's flipped up over on its top of itself. And I went and I looked on the balcony, and there's my friend shaking like a leaf on a tree. And I said, what happened? And he goes, I don't know. No, what happened? I said, okay. And I said, Sharon, Jay. And I said this verbally. I said, is this your doing? And literally about 5 seconds later, we both heard a voice say something. And I said, I heard something. And he goes, I heard something, but I'm too shaken to the bone to know.
Well, was it his brother?
And I said, the voice said, his brother. And I looked at him, I said, I just heard it. And I said, the voice said, his brother. And I said, I don't have a brother, but you did. And he's now gone. And he looks at me, he goes, you didn't know my brother. And it's like, no, I didn't know your brother at all. And he goes, he was a practical joker.
Wow.
And I said, holy heck. And I said, oh,
right,
my God.
Right.
And I said, he's letting me know he's okay. And I was like, holy.
Yeah, so it doesn't matter. The spirit doesn't have to be connected to, spirits are everywhere. And
of course, you don't have to come here to talk to your dead relative, basically. If you want closure is what I'm getting.
Right.
You can just say to them, go, when you go to sleep, when you're in your sleep, and when you're sleeping, try to communicate to them, because in your subconscious, your mind opens up and you can talk to them, and they'll talk to you if they want to and they feel the need to. It might not be the time for you to hear what you need to hear.
Right.
Because other things have to fall in place for you to feel more comfortable sometimes.
Sure.
Other things to settle down, for lawsuits to dissipate, for anger to dissipate towards other family members because of issues of financial hardship, of saying, well, I want this. No, it's mine. You know, the arguing and bickering when
right.
something passes away is a problem I'm getting. But the point is that they're always there around you. You can always get a sense. Sometimes you'll feel a cold breeze right next to you. It's like, what the heck was that? I felt that. It felt like it just reminded me of my brother. And it's in moments when you just least expect it and you immediately get that sense and you think about that person, they're there with you.
Let's go to, we're going to go west, way west, out to Hawaii. Diana, you're next up on coast.
Mahalo.
Oh, hi. What's sort of funny is I have a question, but as I've been waiting to state my question, I've been seeing four orbs were floating around me, teeny orbs. They just all dissipated. It's happened to me before in the past, but once before in the past, but this was sort of funny timing.
Yeah, interesting. Interesting.
Yeah, there were four small orbs, very colorful. One was green, and then the other one was like the outer rim was red and orange and then yellow in the middle. And it was like, wow, it was just the timing. But anyways, this is my question. Do some of the energies in your house like affect the behavior of the people in the house?
No. Insofar as it's not like spirits can just jump into somebody like the movies would make you believe and say, I'm going to take you and you're going to become a flesh puppet to me. And I'm now going to draw, you're going to be like a marionette. When I say raise your arm, you're going to raise your arm. A spirit cannot occupy a human's body and make you do something against your will. That just doesn't cut it. And people have asked me, can spirits do harm to people? And I said, look, in the first case, if a spirit could do harm to people, there's several million years of people killing other people. And if there was ever a time when a spirit would want to kill somebody, it would probably be the person that they would want to seek revenge upon is somebody that killed them and put them in the grave. And last time I checked, Adolf Hitler didn't die by a spirit, and there were 6 million Jews and another 10 million non-Jews that were put to the gas chamber at his finger. So I would have to say, for everybody who claims that a spirit can torture them and hurt them and kill them, tell me why it is that so many people that are murder victims don't come back to kill the murderers that killed them.
Interesting. Diana.
It's a rational thought. I got to tell you about that. And by the way, Diana, I'm being told, you have to remember where you are in the Hawaiian Highlands is got to be one of the hotbeds of paranormal activity, because exactly what I said about the Earth's magnetic field, magma and lava is all full of lots of geomagnetic energies in it because it's basically iron-based. So if you go out there with a compass, it'll screw around with your compasses. So you've got lots of energy there that's basically allowing spirits to manifest, just like it's here at the house.
Thank you for the phone call, Diana, and have a great, safe Halloween.
Okay, you too.
Thank you so much. Let's go to Wild Card, Shara, right here, Sacramento, California. Welcome to Coast.
Hi. It sounds weird, Sacramento, because I'm from L.A., and I miss it so much, and I hope the spirits will say I'm coming back eventually.
Well, we miss you, too. Okay, fair enough.
Thank you. I had an observation and a question. As far as Beverly Glen and Benedict Canyon goes, when I lived in the Valley, and I went to school and worked at UCLA, and when I would be coming up Sunset and turn left onto Beverly Glen to go up Benedict Canyon, I would just feel so much relief when I got on that and out of traffic. And that area has such a spiritual resonance that's amazing. And I think that so many people focus on that negative, horrible thing that happened there and forget that there's so much other just wonderful, beautiful spiritual energy there. They actually teach a class at UCLA on the history of Los Angeles, and that event being just the end of the innocence and, and the beginning of terror and fear and paranoia. And, every time I would drive Benedict Canyon, I felt just relaxed and relieved. I haven't been to that place, mind you, but
that's
important to remember.
Yeah, and I agree with you. And that's why I said at the beginning of the show I wanted everybody to understand the lay of the land here and the way we look at that area, Beverly Glen, Benedict Canyon, and that it is, you know, perfection. It really is. But I will admit, when I'm driving up Benedict Canyon, I don't even want to look on at the street sign. Cielo. I don't. You know, and it's right there, and we all know what that street is, and it's a bizarre thing to have in such a beautiful, beautiful neighborhood. So, did you have a question, Char?
Yes, I did. I was wondering, there's so many places in Los Angeles that you hear about that have hauntings and vortexes. I had a friend that lived in a place. I went in, I said, "Whoa, this place is haunted." He said, "Yeah, Bing Crosby used to live here and haunt it." And I guess he says, "Boo, boo, boo, boo." Bad joke. But there's so many places there that are tied with old Hollywood and celebrity. I wonder if the adoration of celebrity helps to amplify, if you will, that any spiritual residual presence that's left over.
I think it's all over the place. David?
I'll say that I've been to a great many places, and as a matter of fact, I was at a friend of Bing Crosby's called John Decker. He's famous because he was friends with W.C. Fields and Errol Flynn, and his house is over in Brentwood. And I don't know how it is that I get so fortunate in going to places that happen to be not, I would say in a sense, infamous because of old Hollywood. But when I went in there, it was like, oh, my God, I said, I looked up and it was this almost like an English Tudor style house. And it was crazy because you go in and it's got this huge, almost like an entryway into this big, big, big dining hall. And I mean a dining hall where the roof was, ceiling was like 20, 15 foot tall, and it was all wood and all raw wood, like hewn wood, like you were in England in an old type of a Tudor manner. And I looked it straight in and I saw this kind of a, what do you call it, balcony. And it looked out with the railing and it looked out upon the dining hall, and I said, "What the hell?" And all of a sudden, I can see John Barrymore Senior, orating from there and talking. And all of a sudden, I see two big tables, like old knights tables that were there out of wood that were there. These 10 foot long tables by 4 foot wide with men sitting. I'm saying, "Oh my God!" I said, and he's talking in spirit. And I'm going, "Oh my God." So I said, "Tell me the history of this place." And she goes, "Oh, all these people." And I said, "Yeah, I can tell." I said, "I see Barrymore orating from the guy's turn balcony." And she goes, "Oh, I got to take you upstairs." And she takes me to this little room that's right next to that balcony. And I said, "What's this? What's this little peephole?" And she goes, "Well, the room that you're in that's adjacent to that little balcony is where Errol Flynn used to take advantage of young girls. And the other ones of the cohorts would sit there and look through the peephole to see and watch him voyeuristically do his deeds." And I'm like, "Oh, my God, this place is so whacked." And what it is that Hollywood, it's not the adoration, it's that they are, we're passionate individuals. They live life to the craziest extent that they could. And thereby saying they weren't, I heard, "We weren't finished when they called our number and asked us to come up. We got lucky and got to stay down here."
And interesting.
That's what happens. It's not a matter of, some people say it's tragic deaths or an untimely death. I personally think that some people just don't want to go and don't feel that the party's over and end up staying. And some people have the luck of the draw, and maybe it's their death that it happens. It's tragic and they stay. But I think it has to do in some way, shape, or form to, again, like the neighbor down the street who's the guy that died, you know, after they bought the house and started remodeling it, he was jumping up and down and pounding up and down the hallway because he didn't like the fact that he was having his place remodeled. The key component I come back to is passion. These people couldn't let go. They were passionately tied to it, and that's why they're still here. It has nothing to do with much of anything else except their passion play for desire to stay. In a sense, unfinished.
It's so funny you bring up Errol Flynn, because I was going to mention, even when you go up to Runyon Canyon, the hiking trail and past the dog park, the steps of his old place are up there. And when I would walk up there and go on hikes, you could just feel it. And I would feel kind of a weird vibe, because I'd heard the stories of Errol Flynn. I would feel such a strong presence in and around that area.
And his tennis court is still there as well. Well, it was there until they decided to remodel and redo it with a with an endorsement from some corporation that bought the rights to that, to put that on the new basketball court. But, yeah, I've been up there, and I felt the same thing. I said, oh, you're still around here. But it's not like they hang in one place. It's not like he has to be there. He hangs there from time to time. I'm sure he still goes to the remains of what was once the Brown Derby and other places that he frequented, because when I went to that place, the John Decker house, it was like, wow. I said, this is pretty wild. Also, there was a place in Hollywood that's the oldest school in Hollywood. It was turned into, it was an elementary school. It was a red elementary schoolhouse type of school from 1900, where all the Hollywood celebrities took their kids. And they literally moved it back 50 feet from the actual Hollywood Boulevard to preserve it, because it was such, it was named a historical landmark. When I went there, I heard the spirits, one of the spirits upstairs saying, it's not the same. He kept on looking out the window and pointing out the window saying, it's not the same. And I'm saying, what's not the same? He goes, "It does. It's not the same." So I asked the owner when I was there like 7 years ago for my first time being there. I said, there's a spirit here. And he goes, oh, you know this. I said, yeah, he's telling me that this isn't the way it was. He says, it's not the same. And he goes, you've never been here. I said, no. And he goes, they moved the building back, set it back 50 feet from where it was originally stationed in the front, so they could build the two buildings to the left and the right of the schoolhouse. And I said to him, I said, do you mean? He goes, that's what I was trying to say to you. It's not the same. I was like, okay, spirit, I got it. I got it. And it's like they want somebody that can speak to them. They're looking to communicate in some way, shape, or form, to be acknowledged is what it is. And sometimes the sheer fact that they're acknowledged, they feel like, okay, I got that off my chest. Okay, I can go on now.
Wait, let me jump in right there and say thank you for the phone call, Shara, and have a great, safe Halloween.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you so much. You know, David, before I let you go, I wanted to share this with you. Up on the top of Lake Avenue in Pasadena,
yes.
If you go up to the top, yep. Is one of the Marx Brothers' houses there, and the foundation is there. He donated that land to the state, right? It's a park. And you can go up there, guaranteed freak out. The spirits are everywhere.
You're going to have to take me up there, Jimmy, and I will go on a trip with you up there, and we'll videotape it, because I am so intrigued by going up there and seeing that property, I'm being told. That would be a pleasure to do with you sometime. So keep it in the back of your mind, and don't forget, I want to see you here soon so you can actually experience the house firsthand and tell your friends about it.
We're going to be up there tomorrow night. Got to jump. Thank you so much, David Omen, the Omen House. Go check out his YouTube channel. It's very simple. Check out David Omen. The links are over at Coast to Coast. I'm your host, Jimmy Church. We'll be right back with Chris Medina.